Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. This is Fascinating Ohio, a show where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. OHuddle is a one-to-one mentorship program that connects youth with older mentors to grow their strengths and advantages. Through community engagement, sponsored field trips, and volunteer work, OHuddle is building a core group of Ohio youth ready to succeed. Joining us now is Sarah Reith, the Executive Director of OHuddle Mentors, which is based out of Wayne County. Thanks for being here, Sarah.
I'm so grateful to be here.
So first of all, your organization is just about ready to celebrate 10 years, so congratulations.
Thank you.
And you founded the organization, so can you tell me about the journey from an idea, I guess, about 10-ish years ago to what it is now?
Absolutely. So I was previously the school psychologist over at Worcester City Schools. You know, what I learned in my practice there and what I knew for sure relative to the clinical world of psychology that I had worked in prior to is that not every student has somebody around them who's advocating, who's making sure that they have exactly what they need in order to help them to thrive. And about 10 years ago, we were having a scarcity model of the resources that were available in Worcester City Schools. And what we knew that we wanted to do was to go to the research. And what the research told us is that when kids are living in poverty and when they've experienced a trauma, mentorship is the number one research-based intervention. And so very honestly, I tried to get somebody else to do it for a long time. And then we grassrooted it out of our heartbreak over a couple of stories, a couple of students that we just knew needed to have a sense of equity and access to resources in the community.
And you mainly, you know, you're based out of Worcester, but you are focusing on all of Wayne County, right? So this is a countywide operation. How many schools are you working with?
We're in 10 districts. We're in 24 schools, and we serve 714 students with one-to-one mentorship.
Over 700 students. What number did you say?
714.
714. So yeah. If it's 714 one-to-one, that means you need 714 adults, right?
That's right. In some cases, we do have an adult serving two students at two different times, so it's still one-to-one. Mm-hmm. But absolutely, we actually continue to have a wait list. We have a wait list of 135 students still beyond that 714 that are waiting for a one-to-one mentor.
Okay. So your website says, life's a journey, who's in your huddle? So I guess that means you're talking about huddling alongside, like supporting you. Is that where the name comes from?
Absolutely. So OHuddle means Odyssey Huddle. We're all on our journey. I always say, you know, we
oh,
all...
wait, OHuddle's not Ohio. It's, got it.
Could be beyond for sure.
Right.
You know, but I think the Odyssey, the idea that everyone has a season of winter, a season of spring, and it's your people that huddle around you in that winter. And so we want to make sure that every child has that in the form of a huddle. You know, as an educator, people would always say the adage, it takes a village to raise a child. But when you're in public education, you have a certain number of humans, a certain number of dollars, and your needs surpass that. And so we would always get really angry at that adage because where's our village? Mm-hmm. The huddle has become the village in our school districts in Wayne County.
How do you find the students who need the huddle, who need a mentor?
Well, fortunately, mentorship is good for everyone. Mm-hmm. And so while we started in a scarcity model of needing to serve those students who were living in deep poverty and also those students who had experienced trauma, who had a high number of ACE scores, adverse childhood experiences, we now have a really heterogeneous group. Our referrals come mostly from teachers. They come from our school administrators. Students will even come in and they will refer themselves. And they'll say, I see my friend has a mentor. I think this would be a good idea for me. Parents, youth pastors, people from outside the community will call into the school. The great thing about mentorship is that it's low stigma. We know that Beyonce had a mentor and LeBron James had a mentor and Neil Armstrong had a mentor. And with that, we're able to leverage and catapult the potential for each kid. So that's always a good thing.
Yeah. So you're not necessarily saying, you kid, you have a problem,
right,
and you need help from someone.
We call it a nomination process, which mm-hmm. is an important language point for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I wanted to say, full disclosure, you have a annual gala, which is a fundraising gala, and my husband was one of the speakers at that gala, which is how I became familiar with OHuddle. And at your event, whenever your goal is to raise money, but you're also highlighting success stories of the program. Can you tell me one of those success stories? Just tell me like one of your favorites. It'll be a good example of what OHuddle does.
Absolutely. So one of my favorites is our very first student that really was part of the heartbeat behind why do we need mentorship? You know, I think public school educators, they work hard. You know this, your husband's an educator. They are constantly giving of themselves. They'll put the extra pair of shoes in the cart or the extra granola bars, and they'll give of their own pay when there is scarcity. But we were in this season where, you know, 50% of the kids were needing something. They were needing breakfast. They were needing clothing security in the schools. And that surpassed the need of our teachers. And so at the same time, I had teachers coming and putting their head on my desk and crying and saying, what are we going to do about this need? I had this one little girl that I was serving in the elementary school, and she was eating staples in the hallway. And being in clinical psychology, you know that that's always a red flag. We looked further. There were additional red flags. We were working earnestly to try and get her removed from this very abusive, deeply abusive household that she was in. The first time that I saw her out of that household, I realized she had blonde hair. And I didn't know that because nobody had ever washed her hair. And at the same time, I had just had my daughter, and she was 3 months old, and I was rocking her to sleep, and she never slept at night. And I was thinking about all of the people who were rallying around her to hear her first word and to be thirsty for what her favorite color would be. And this other girl named Angel, who had no one, genuinely no one, who was bearing history for her. Angel became one of our very first mentees, and she is now 20 years old. And, you know, more than 10 years later, being able to see the huddle that is around her, getting her first prom dress, making sure that we're advocating on a health front for her, and making sure that she has people around her who are helping her to be her best self. She was actually celebrated here in Columbus a year and a half ago as the Youth of the Year with the Linda Moody Female Youth of the Year Award for the Ohio State Juvenile Justice meeting. So I think that's a big full circle for us in when we are able to see a student over time that we are continuing to pour into, and what that can become even from a significant hardship starting point.
This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking with Sarah Reith, the executive director of OHuddle Mentors, which is based out of Wayne County. So you, how many mentors or students have you had, quote, I guess, graduate from the program?
Like, yes.
Yeah, I'm sure they're all in it for a different amount of time because it depends on their age.
I love that you're asking numbers, because I always say that I heart spreadsheets and
yeah.
I love data. And so we're at about 1306 students that have been in the program at any given time, and then 714 that are current. And so we have had a good majority of students who have graduated. Once we engage a student, they're able to be in programming until they graduate. And what's really neat is that at that graduation point, a warm handoff becomes the mentor and the student then are able to access each other's phone numbers and addresses and become friends and meet independently and on their own. So there are so many mentor relationships that are continuing past graduation, where they still meet for breakfast and they're still in each other's lives. And that's a really cool legacy to leave.
So right now you are coordinating meetings with the mentors.
Yeah.
By you just explaining that about them exchanging numbers afterward. So tell me about how you set up these meetings and how often and how that all works.
Right. So it starts with the interests that a mentor has, the interests a student has, even, you know, lived experience that may be similar or areas of deficit. The student doesn't have mom at home, doesn't have dad at home. You know, how do we match on the basis of that? And being able to then launch them into a match that feels like it can, you know, be long term over time. We do that in a very scaffolded way. We have a site coordinator who's in every district and every building that we're serving in. And that looks like us harnessing research-based practice and intervention through the 40 developmental assets to make sure that we're hosting intentional conversations during the school day, and then providing opportunities outside of the school day that are always supervised by those site coordinators.
Okay. And I also saw on your website you have field trips, too. I saw some pictures. Tell me about the field trips.
Yeah, not every kid goes someplace outside of their household in Walmart. And so we want to push the walls of their experiences into the community and into things that are a part of what we call their spark of interest. So the flame that is represented in the OHuddle logo is representative that everybody has a spark. For me, it was art. I loved art as a kid. And I had an art teacher who came alongside of me and said, you know, you really should enter this into this contest, or you really should try and, you know, participate in the set design and drama club, because you can add value there. We want each child to have an opportunity around that and their mentor breathing value. And so the field trips affiliate with different sparks that are opportunities for kids, whether they be meeting with a college coach in a sports clinic or being a part of our interactive mural that we just launched in downtown Worcester.
Yeah, tell me about the interactive mural.
So we have a 600 square foot mural that we've been working on for over 3 years. When we inventoried our students, we had so many students who identified themselves as artists and said, I want to be a part of something that fosters a sense of belonging and something that's going to be here after I'm gone. And we really looked at the Journey mural that's here in the Short North that is an interactive mural and loved it and regarded it and said, how could we do something in that vein? And so we had several field trips. We had what we called fancy art shows where kids dressed up and learned how to tie ties and got to take them home and had their art displayed at the Wayne Center for the Arts. And that then culminated in us putting up a 600 square foot mural that the student artwork will use augmented reality to pop out of the designs that are featured in the mural. The students, there are three students that are represented in the mural, and the center student is Angel. And what I think is really a serendipitous moment is that the mural building is just down the street from the house that we removed her from over 12 years ago now.
Wow. Now, how do you find the adults, the mentors? I mean, I'm sure you have a screening process and such, but how do you find the right people and enough people?
Absolutely. So we're always looking for mentors. So we go and look to establish corporate relationships. We are talking at local churches. Because it's such a highly scaffolded and supported role, it's one that we are able to cast a wide net for. We actually had a mentor who had an eighth grade education. She was former Amish. She had raised a family, and now she had an empty nest. And she said, I want to come and mentor, but I'm not quite sure. I'm feeling vulnerable to this. I'm feeling as though this may not be something that is in my core skill set. And we said, no worries, we're able to get you there. And their relationship, her relationship with her student, was one of our most famous because they were actually so different and came together and grew this love together that really felt hopeful to the school building.
Well, and I know that you have training as well, because you're not just taking random adult and throwing them with random kid and say,
absolutely,
and say, please get along.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah. Tell me about the training. Yeah.
Yeah. So we leverage those 40 developmental assets, and we use a training model that we call internally eating the whale. So what we don't want to do is we don't want to have 3 months worth of training and then give you a binder and say, go, good luck. We instead want to have small bite size, really able to be digested points of information that are going to last over time and that you can put into practice in a supervised way with that site coordinator there for a gradual release model. And so from that standpoint, for us, it really becomes having a dip of information that then is able to culminate into mindful practice. More than 90% of our mentors stay for 3 and 4 and 7 and 8 years. And so we really feel that the model is working. And because we put research-based elements inclusive of developmental psychology into play, and we're doing it, really truncating it under small bite-sized information, it works so effectively for us.
Now, you seem to have a great model here. Have other counties or organizations reached out to you? Has anyone copied you? That's a form of flattery.
It's a form of flattery. We would love to be copied, because I really have looked far and wide to try and seek out the model that we are establishing. I'm a public school educator at heart, and I would have never left working directly for the public schools, except that we needed this resource and intervention so significantly. I can't quite find another county or another organization who is engaging one-to-one school-based mentorship in a way that it really is a top of the iceberg. And what I mean by that is, for us, mentorship, yes, is research-based and so important, but underneath that, underneath the iceberg, which is so big under the water, is social work. And so for us, what we're looking to do is we're looking to service coordinate, and we're looking to connect to mental health, physical health, clothing security, food security. And we are the major player in most of the school buildings that is fostering that and creating pathways towards it. And so we would love for this to expand into other places who want to learn. We actually have a new model called Co-Huddle. We have had many school districts reach out and say, we want you to grow over in Colorado, where we want you to grow down here in Florida. I can't do a site visit every single week out there, but we can teach them to do it. And so Co-Huddle is a form of us enabling schools over, again, a gradual release for 3 years to take our model and make it their own and enable them to multiply the number of humans that they can have come in and the number of corporate donors that can help solve problems for them.
Well, Sarah Ree, thank you for telling us about O-Huddle.
I'm so grateful. Thank you for the opportunity.
Sarah Reith, the executive director of OHuddle Mentors, a mentorship-based program that matches youth one-to-one with a mentor in Wayne County. Thanks again for being here. And coming up, we're going to be talking butterflies. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich, and this is Fascinating Ohio, a show from All Sides that introduces you to people with an interesting story to tell. With spring blossoming, butterflies are making their return to our daily lives. But have you ever wanted to be surrounded by this beautiful species? Butterfly Ridge is a 21-acre slice of the Hocking Hills, and their mission is to foster and help Ohio's butterfly population. With a focus on the environment and what you can do to help butterflies, Butterfly Ridge is trying to build a better future for these bugs. Joining us now is Christopher Klein, who is the founder and director of Butterfly Ridge, and they have quadrupled their butterfly population over the past few years locally. Welcome to Fascinating Ohio, Christopher.
Hey, thank you.
So you've quadrupled the butterfly population. I mean, that is an amazing thing. We will get to that. But tell me, what made you decide to focus on butterflies and open a butterfly conservation center?
Well, it seems like most of the jobs I had over the course of my adult life tended to steer around towards butterflies and in one way or another. And we were gifted a section of the family property down in the Hocking Hills. It's property, it's been in my family since 1863. And kind of independently of each other, my wife and I mean, we would go visit my parents down there and everything, but we weren't really playing on our piece of it much, and we started feeling guilty about that. And so we started thinking, well, what could we do with a piece of land like that? And well, we were both former educators, and like I said, all my jobs had geared around towards butterflies, so a butterfly education thing seemed like the right fit for us.
Yeah, tell me, what is a job geared toward butterflies? Like, what is a past job you've had?
Well, for example, I was the butterfly guy at Franklin Park Conservatory for 6 years.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, I didn't, yeah. I mean, I know Franklin Park Conservatory has butterflies, so I guess they have to have a butterfly guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have thought that. Yeah. Yeah. Was that a fun job?
Yeah, it was, although it was very different from what we do now. Mm-hmm. I think of the work I did at Franklin Park more as a butterfly zoo, so to speak, whereas what we do now is more of a safari type of an experience.
Okay, well, yeah, that's interesting. So let's dig into that. So tell me about what Butterfly Ridge is and what it does.
Okay, well, as you mentioned previously, we're a 21-acre site. What we've done is we've taken basically old, abused agricultural property, and we've converted it into more appropriate habitat for butterflies and other pollinators, and then we teach folks like yourselves to do the same on property that you may have. So we've converted about 2.5 acres of old abused farm field into tall grass prairie. We have been cutting little woodland openings out of areas that used to be fields but have now grown up to be forest. We have a wetland area that we've enhanced with different plantings. So since 2015, we've planted in the neighborhood of 7,000 plants, all of which are designed to be helpful to butterflies in one fashion or another.
Okay, so tell us why we want to have more butterflies.
Okay. Well, butterflies, I mean, not only are they pretty to look at and everything, but butterflies, just like bees and moths and beetles, I mean, they perform pollination duties. And a picture that I remember like it was yesterday, I was doing a class at Franklin Park, actually, a butterfly gardening class, and I had found online through a Chinese website, actually, a Chinese news site, of these guys that were climbing up into fruit trees and actually pollinating the fruit tree flowers by hand with tiny little paintbrushes. And the reason they were doing that was because they had killed all their bees through inappropriate pesticide use and whatnot. And so that's one of the lessons we try to get across to people is we need to be more pollinator friendly, or we're going to be the ones that are going to be up in the apple trees pollinating them with little tiny paintbrushes. And so, and one of the things that we really try to emphasize to folks is, yeah, we have 21 acres, but you don't need 21 acres. I mean, you can accomplish good, positive things just on an apartment balcony. It's, you know, it's all about plant selection and land management. And if you don't have much land, you can still do the plant selection piece.
This is Fascinating Ohio, a show from all sides where we introduce you to Ohioans with an interesting story to tell. We're talking with Christopher Klein, who is the founder and director of Butterfly Ridge, a butterfly conservation center located in Hocking Hills. So tell us about those plants. What do we need to plant and focus on in order to help butterflies?
Well, we work specifically with native perennials. So we plant a lot of wild bergamot and mountain mint, a lot of false indigo, a lot of purple coneflower. As I mentioned, we've converted that old abused farm field to tallgrass prairie, so we've got a lot of big blue stem Indian grass. And even though those grasses don't necessarily produce pretty flowers, they're still actually a really super important caterpillar host plant for certain species of butterflies. So it's more than just planting flowers. You have to have the right flowers. I tell people you can have the biggest, bestest rose garden in Franklin County and not have butterfly one, because roses just aren't designed right for butterflies to be able to exploit. You need plants in which the flowers are like long tubular flowers, and there's a bunch of them clustered in like to a little landing pad. So yeah, the mints, the milkweeds, things in the sunflower family are usually good choices too.
So when I say in the introduction that you quadrupled the butterfly population, does that mean on your 21 acres, where you saw just a few butterflies years ago, you now see a lot?
Correct. Yeah, we started walking a transect at the beginning of every month. We started this back in April of 2015, and we walk certain sections of our mile-long trail and document every single butterfly that we see. And we do that every month, April through October, usually during the first week of the month. And yeah, and if you look at our data over the years, our butterfly population from that baseline data in 2015 has grown roughly 300%, while nationwide, and I don't know if you saw this or not, I think it was in the New York Times back in the beginning of March, there was an article about butterfly populations nationwide are down by like 25% since the year 2000. So nationwide, butterfly populations are down. At Butterfly Ridge, they're up by 300%. So that tells me what we're doing is working.
Yeah, and you're doing your own little piece in your own little part of the planet, right?
Exactly.
So you created Butterfly Ridge, though. You have programming, you have events, you invite people in. Tell me about that.
Yeah, we are open to the public. Actually, yesterday was opening day.
Opening day.
Thank you. For the 2025 season. So, and we'll be open every day but Tuesday until October 15. And once again, folks can walk the mile-long trail. There's a small admission fee, $6 per person, and that helps us pay for the work that we do. We have guided tours at 1 o'clock and 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so that not only can we teach people about the butterflies that are flying around at the moment, but also some of this habitat work that we've done. We give away free seed to people to kind of help them get started along the same route that we've gone. Another program we do is Saturday nights, June through August. We call it the Mothing Zone because moths are pollinators too. And so we have mothing stations set up throughout the property. It's basically a white sheet hanging from a scaffolding with ultraviolet light on one side and a mercury vapor light on the other. And the bright lights attract moths to the white sheet. Since 2015, we have documented just shy of 1,100 moth species at our place. Several, we are the only sighting for them in the state of Ohio. Another several have not even been scientifically described yet. They're just known by numerical placeholders.
Oh, wow.
So we get some pretty cool moths at our place, too.
Yeah. So whenever you have people come and see you, is it people who are maybe spending the weekend in Hocking Hills and looking for an activity and you invite them out to walk your trail?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. We get a lot of folks that are vacationing in the Hocking Hills. We see a lot of people from Detroit and Pittsburgh and Fort Wayne and places like that.
Yeah. Do you have field trips too? Do you do groups of kids?
We tend to not get very many school field trips, and I think it's as much of a parking issue for us because I don't have very many good places to put four or five school buses.
Right.
But like we have summer camps that come visit us. Hocking County Soil and Water, they do a lot of summer camp activities, and we're usually one of their stops with the campers there. We get a lot of developmentally disabled groups that come through and walk the trail. So we get some different folks that take advantage of what we've got.
I found out about you because of Jared the Nature Guy, who it works at the preschool and daycare that my kids went to. And so Jared spends his time teaching 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, and 4-year-olds, literally little tiny kids, to love bugs and love nature. Whenever you think about that, you know, getting young kids to love a butterfly probably is easy because they're pretty, but what do you tell them about the importance of butterflies?
You know, sometimes you skip the importance concept because they're just enthralled by the whole thing and by seeing the caterpillars and seeing the adult butterflies. Every now and then you get the really weird kid, I guess, who, their parents bring them for moth lighting nights. I remember one family, and this little boy was probably 5 or 6. And let me tell you, we got 11:30, 11:45 at night. This kid was still going strong, wanted to know every single bug that was on that sheet. Mom and dad were sitting on the bench a ways back, half asleep, and this little guy, I mean, he was still going strong. And sometimes they're just so enthralled with just, the pretty colors and the shapes and designs and everything. And sometimes that's how you get them hooked. Just by thinking it's cool looking. And then at some point in the future, you can kind of take them the next step to actually caring about, the life cycle of that animal and the role that animal plays for the rest of us as well. But sometimes it's the pretty piece that gets them hooked.
So. Yeah. But you're training a future entomologist there.
Exactly.
Exactly. Do you have a favorite butterfly? Is there a favorite one?
It's not found in Ohio. It's called the Zami Hairstreak. That's spelled X-A-M-I. It's a tiny little green butterfly about fingernail size. And they are only found in a handful of locations in southern Arizona and extreme southern Texas. And I happened to discover one of those locations in Arizona. And honestly, I'm also a sucker for green bugs. So that's why they're my favorite.
So you were in Arizona for the purpose of finding them, or?
Well, I actually grew up in Arizona.
Okay.
And I was the education director at the Boyce Thompson Arboretum, which is about an hour east of Phoenix, and we did a lot of butterfly work there as well. We actually started a monarch tagging program at Boyce Thompson because nobody had ever studied southwestern monarchs before. And then we also helped start a butterfly club in the Phoenix area, the Central Arizona Butterfly Association. So we were big into butterflies at BTA.
So having Butterfly Ridge here, did it kind of start small as like a passion project before it became an actual, I don't know, do you call it a business?
Yes, we call it a business. We would like to have more business.
Yes.
But, you know, it was one of those things that with the way it worked out, yeah, you could call it a passion project. For us, it really felt like somebody was laying out breadcrumbs for us to follow, and we would have been total cads if we had not have followed them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a passion, but we're trying to make a living at it as well.
Yeah. Is all of Hocking Hills good for butterflies, or is your place in particular, you've curated it to be the best?
Well, I like to think that we're the best.
You are the best, I'm sure.
Of course.
Yes.
But what you're really looking for is a variety of habitats. I mean, just a great big, huge, giant field is not going to yield the butterfly diversity that a field with pockets of trees and pockets of openings and then wetland area with the unique set of plants that wetlands offer, you know, all that works together to create really good butterfly habitat.
And you said you had guided tours twice a day, 1 o'clock and 3 o'clock. If I'm planning to visit you, is there a particular type of weather that will get me the most butterflies?
Yeah, sunny and warm.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, for example, yesterday it was sunny, but it was kind of on the cool and windy side. We weren't seeing much.
Mm-hmm.
But now tomorrow it's supposed to be 80-something degrees and sunny, and so I'm expecting tomorrow to be a fabulous butterfly day, at least for this time of year, a fabulous day.
For your guided tours, do you guarantee people will see a butterfly, you find them for them?
We do our best. We can't make guarantees because that's the one thing.
You can't control the butterflies?
Exactly. You know, it's one of those things, if you plant it, they will come,
mm-hmm.
but it's still up to them to come. And for me, that's one of the fun things about it being an outdoor safari type adventure,
mm-hmm.
is you honestly don't know what's going to show up. And so, for example, last year, and this is the second year we had them, we had this really super rare butterfly. It's called a dusted skipper, previously only known from the Toledo area.
Mm.
And now they're showing up at our place, and just something very unexpected. And for me, that's the fun of it, is the unexpected. So,
all right. How do people find you? On website, where do you want to send
okay.
them?
We are at www.butterfly-ridge.com. We're also on Facebook, also on Instagram. And once again, we're right in the heart of Hocking Hills. So you can't drive from Rock House to Old Man's Cave without going past our driveway. So.
Oh, great location. Okay. I want to thank you for your time. Christopher Klein, founder and director of Butterfly Ridge, a butterfly conservation center located in Hocking Hills. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thank you.
This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. Coming up, we're going to talk with a local folk singer. That's when our program continues.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich, and this is Fascinating Ohio, a show where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. The upcoming Central Ohio Folk Festival is set to kick off in a couple of weeks, featuring talented artists, kids programming, community sing-alongs, drum circles, and more. With us is someone who's been performing and writing music ever since he was a teenager. He incorporates historical aspects and activism into his songwriting and has roots right here at WOSU. Bill Cohen, welcome to Fascinating Ohio.
Thank you so much.
Can you start with your journey on how you got to where you are now? You've been a folk musician for a long time, but your other career is as a journalist, first here at WOSU and then many, many years at the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. How did those two paths coexist for you?
Well, you know, Amy, I don't want to sound old, but I started at WOSU before you were born, I think, 1970. That's right.
It was before I was born.
Yeah, got my first main job, so I'm so thankful to WOSU, and worked several years at WOSU as a general assignment reporter and statehouse reporter. Then 1980, we created the Statehouse News Bureau, mm-hmm. feeding in-depth statehouse, state government stories to all the public radio stations in Ohio. And, that was a wonderful, I'm just thrilled that I was able to have a fun and interesting job for so long.
Yeah. Do you ever miss it?
Just a little bit, especially in today's atmosphere. We always focused on issues with our reporting. Here are the arguments for and here are the arguments against. But so much of the atmosphere today is kind of name-calling, and so I don't know if I'd survive very well. So I'm glad I retired in 2013.
Yes, yeah. You got out just in time.
Yeah.
So how did being a journalist and being a musician kind of intersect for you? Were you always, when you had a hard day at work being a journalist, did you go home and play music?
Well, that's true. It's a real, stress reliever. Mm-hmm. I think the one thing that they have in common is I love when we do music at nursing homes, at independent living retirement villages, and for the general public. My wife, Randy, helps me out with those. Whenever we do music, we often try to talk about the history of a song and what was going on in the country when that song came out in 1958. Or what were the tumultuous things happening in the 60s that song might reflect? So I think my love for looking at politics and history, I think that comes out, and that's where maybe reporting and my music intersect.
Let's listen to a little bit of your music. This is a little something I pulled off of your Facebook page. We'll just call this Bill Cohen and Friends.
I remember the night and the ten. Now I know just how much I have lost. I lost my little darling the night they were playing the beautiful Tennessee Waltz.
Now that's just beautiful, but I picked that clip for a particular reason. It's because you and your friends, you're all together.
Yeah, I often have other people singing with me, and that was a good example. That was for a Valentine-themed show, a concert that we did as a fundraiser for the Columbus Folk Music Society back in February. We've done that for years and years and years, and it's a lot of fun. And the harmony, I just love singing with other people. Mm. And when you hit that, when you get three people singing or more at a time, with harmony and you create a chord, I am in heaven. So I do a lot of music with other people singing background and sometimes singing lead. I'm so thankful for them. Once in a while, we have one of your predecessors.
That's why I picked that clip. If you could, we're listening carefully, you listeners. You heard a flute in there. And the flautist, is that the right word? was Ann Fisher, former All Sides host. So does she play with you often?
Yes. Several times a year we do public concerts, and she appears in those. Her flute playing is immaculate. It really provides a great sparkle to the songs.
Now, you do concerts every few months, and they all have a theme. Do you do the same themes every year, or do you come up with something different? I know the Valentine's Day thing is something you do every year.
Yeah, the Valentine thing is every year. We do a show just the day after Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. Songs of Gratitude. We've mm-hmm. done that for 10 years or so, so that's a constant. We do a thing called the Spirit of the 1960s Coffee House. We've done that for like 38 years. Mm. And there's a lot of visuals and sound bites of things that happened in the 60s. My wife, Randy, helps on the video with that. We plan it for months and months with iconic photographs and video. And so sometimes we add fun trivia questions. So those are kind of constant shows. But we've started doing in recent years a Labor Day weekend show, a salute to all who work. Mm. So that's kind of something new. We did a show for a while called Time and Memories, which just had songs reminding us how precious time is, especially as we grow older. Mm. So we're always looking for kind of new ideas. Oh, we're thinking of a late June show, which we've never done before. A tribute to Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Aww.
And I think people in our older generation certainly cherish that trio, and people, younger generations,
if you
too.
Promise to sing Puff the Magic Dragon, I'll come.
Yes, that'll be in there, and we'll probably invite the audience to sing along.
All right. Yeah. So look for that sometime in June?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking with Bill Cohen, a local folk artist and a retired journalist who was once a reporter here at WOSU and also reported for many years for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. And he is a volunteer at an upcoming Central Ohio Folk Festival. So we'll talk about the Folk Festival in just a minute, but I wanted to play one more of your songs. This is an original song you wrote about a year ago right now for last year's Total Solar Eclipse event. And you said you intended to add some inspiration and meaning to the event.
And as the people gather, our eyes gaze at the sky. The blackness overwhelms us. Mother Earth lets out a cry, but as two circles overlap, a golden crescent glows. Our universe, it feels reborn, our warming sun star grows. In this darkest night, let us move.
So, do you write original music like that often?
Not very often, but mm-hmm. once in a while. And the eclipse was a... You know, I just said, you know, it's such a unique event.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hoping that, you know, it could be an inspiring event. You heard this talk in the weeks leading up. Could this be some kind of inspirational thing that kind of bring people together, mm-hmm. the eclipse itself? And so I thought, well, by adding music and my wife, Randy, we got all videos of old eclipses and other great video we had stored in our own files, mm. and she put together a beautiful video that went with the song. And you know, if you were watching the eclipse, you mm-hmm. did have a special feeling. There was some kind of universality,
yeah.
a feeling of, hey, we're all in this together. So at least for a few brief moments, the eclipse did bring us together.
Yes, it's a beautiful original song. But you said that you mostly do covers, though, right? Do you have a favorite song to perform that you like to the most?
Oh, there's
dozens. You pick your favorite child?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I like the soft rock and the early rock and roll. I like standards from the 30s, 40s, and 50s. We often sing at nursing homes. Folk songs too, I guess, you know, Blowing in the Wind is a kind of a good example of a song that I really love because it's simple, but it's so brilliant. It endures through the decades. It's beautiful. Not so beautiful when Bob Dylan sings it, but when other people like Peter, Paul, and Mary have sung it.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. The sentiment is universal and timeless.
All right, so the Central Ohio Folk Festival is May 3rd and 4th at Highbanks Metro Park, and the poster says it'll have roots and acoustic music at its best. So tell me more. What are you looking forward to the most about the festival?
I think just a feeling of community. We get 10, 11, 12,000 people at our mm-hmm. festival over the 2 days, but at any one point, we don't have 10,000 people, and so it has the intimate feel of just a local community. That's what it feels like. And you have 100 people over here at one tent listening to one musician, 80 people over here participating in something else. And so you're never shoulder to shoulder with a whole bunch of people. It's just, but enough people to say, hey, we're all in this together. And we've got like so many things to do. As you walk in to the festival grounds and make a donation, we don't care how big or how small. Mm. There's so many things to do. There are three different stages with three different acts changing every hour.
Okay.
Then over here, three other tents with workshops about how to play various folk music instruments. And then four or five jam tents where people just get together with an instrument or without and just sing together, totally improvising. Mm. And then just a lot of other things, a store tent with merchandise, but more than a dozen choices at any moment of things to do at our festival.
Can you tell me about the headliner, the biggest name on your poster, Richard Schindel? Is that how you
say it? Yeah, he's been around 40 or 50 years. He's part of... I call him the new breed of singer-songwriters, but he's not all that new. But, you know, compared to Peter, Paul, and Mary of the 1960s and the Kingston Trio, okay, he's new compared to that. He writes brilliant songs. There's a whole new breed of people like Richard Schindel and those much younger, too, coming up through the ranks, writing their own songs that make you laugh one minute and cry the next. Mm-hmm. And some are... You know, some are about social injustice, some are about history, some are about love, introspective. So there's a whole range of topics there.
And I also understand that you have some kids programming.
Oh, at the festival, so much kids program. We'll have a special area for music and dance and storytelling just aimed at children. Plus, we've got this thing called our instrument petting zoo.
Oh,
now,
cute.
You don't pet a lamb or a goat. No, we have a table, a huge table full of instruments, fiddles, mandolins, banjos, guitars, and 2, 3, 5, 7-year-olds can pick up an instrument and see what it's like to hold it and pluck the strings and maybe put the bow against the strings and squeak it and see what it's like to hold those instruments. And I think it can be quite inspirational, especially for children who may have just seen a great musical act 50 yards away at another tent and then have come over to the instrument petting zoo and actually get to pick up an instrument they've seen played. You know, it might be the kind of thing where they say, hey, Mom, Dad, can I take some guitar lessons?
Yeah.
Who knows what it could open up?
Well, they might have seen a guitar before, but maybe that's their first experience with a banjo, right?
Or an auto harp, other instruments, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm interested also in these jam tents. Tell me a little bit more about that. So it's just if you want to play and you want to have that experience, you can have friends with you or it can just be a whole group of strangers.
Yes, just show up with your instrument or you can just listen or you can just sing along. So I think one tent is going to be old-timey music. That's a special genre where I think you don't sing at all. It's all instrumental. Mm. Then we're going to have another tent, I think, with no instruments, and people are just singing a cappella. And then there'll be, you know, Appalachian and bluegrass. And I don't know, you know, it's the kind of thing where it's like people are almost in a circle, and we take turns saying who's going to lead a song. Mm. And hopefully they pick a song that most people know, you know, Will the Circle Be Unbroken, or who knows what it might be. And people with a musical ear can often play along pretty simply with a lot of these folk songs.
Now, I called you a volunteer at this event. Have you been involved with the Central Ohio Folk Festival for a while?
I think we're in our 28th year, and I think Randy and I have been in it from the very beginning. And for many years, Randy was kind of head of volunteers. And we got to round up dozens and dozens, more than 100, almost 200 volunteers to carry this thing off. Since we don't charge $100 or $75 or $50 like a lot of these other folk festivals do, we just ask for a donation. So, we both volunteered for many years doing a lot of things. And one of the things we'll be doing this year is kind of welcoming people as they come in the front gate.
And do you... I mean, is it all volunteer run? Has this been just, it's like a grassroots effort to have this folk festival?
Yeah, I mean, except I think maybe we're paying some of the sound techs this year. Mm-hmm. And of course, some of the acts get paid.
Mm.
But other than that, I mean, we have people guarding the instruments. We're having people taking donations, people setting up chairs. there's just so many different things that need to get done. Well, people in golf carts, schlepping the equipment here and there. And there's so much to do behind the scenes.
All right. So the Central Ohio Folk Festival is May 3rd and 4th at High Banks Metro Park. Are there particular hours? Is there a website we can go to?
Yeah, we'll open the gates around 10:30 each day. And Saturday night, we'll run late around till about 9 or 9:30 at night because we have Under the Stars, Richard Schindel, our featured headliner. And on Sunday, I think we'll wrap up around 5 or 5:30. We'll have a sing-along at the very beginning of the festival, and we'll have a sing-along at the end. We'll have a drum circle each day. So many activities, so much fun.
All right. Well, I hope people check it out. The Central Ohio Folk Festival, May 3rd and 4th at High Banks Metro Park. And I want to say thank you to Bill Cohen, Columbus folk singer, and will be a volunteer at the Central Ohio Folk Festival. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
This has been Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.